to the hopes and the aspirations of all men of his time. And tonight we bring you Such a Voice. It's kind of great, isn't it? Speak of the hopes and the aspirations and all the tears and all those goodies. Bring up that place, all right? Okay, that's enough theme. Hollis, that's it. Kill the theme there. That's it. After all, it's Christmas time, or it's getting up there. And before we get underway tonight, hello, Tess. Let's get everything here. Getting a short here. Hello. What's the matter here? Hello, Tess. There, it's very good. So, before we get underway here tonight, I'd like to apologize to those of you out there who are suffering from a commercial trauma. It's very easy to get it at this time of the year when you're barraged by millions of voices beseeching you to buy at all costs. And, of course, almost any product that is made, according to commercials, makes a perfect Christmas gift. I heard a skid chain commercial the other night, which came on, you know, it shows this fantastic girl was unbelievably endowed. And they were sitting under the Christmas tree, and she had just given her boyfriend, Chris, this is a TV commercial, just give him Chris a matched set of skid chains and snow tires for his Datsun 240Z. It's a very romantic Christmas gift. And I noticed that the Roto-Rooter company is offering a special Christmas gift certificate idea. Get your drains ground out. It's a very romantic idea. So I just thought I'd apologize to those of you who have taken the time to complain bitterly about the fantastic number of commercials that we have these days. It is the holiday season. In fact, I've often said that you could tell what time of the year it is without any knowledge of calendars, if you were in a sealed room, if you were given a transistor radio. Just turn it on, and you could tell exactly what season. Even if the guy doesn't say, hey, it's 4th of July, hello, gang, none of that jazz. Time the commercials. Just the commercial time between commercials is very closely identified. So kind of like an electronic sundial. So immediately after the first of the year, we will return to doing a show. Nevertheless, you know, Christmas is a trauma for many people. It is. It really is. And it is for me particularly. I must say that I enjoy holidays for one reason or another. One of the reasons I enjoy holidays, when you're in media of any type, I don't know why this thing keeps fading off and on here. We're having interesting problems here. I'm going to check just a minute here. Something is going on here. I'm going to try something here. Yeah, hello. 1, 2, 3, 4, hello. Hello, test. That's what happens, you know, when the entire station is built out of a heat kit. Hello, 1, 2, 3, 4. We got 4 12-year-old boys to build it with soldering irons they got down at Kresge's. Hello, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, Ted. There, we got it going again. You know, it's very discouraging to find that the biggest things in the world are really built, and everything is sort of put together. The whole world is kind of a cockamamie construction. You know, you tend to think that things are really official. You know, when you're standing back from it, you probably think NBC is really official. I mean, CBS, really dynamite stuff. You ought to see the rickety desk that John Chancellor has to sit at every night. And, yeah, it's really sad. And he runs around half the time trying to get his cushion for his chair because some secretary took it and it's in the secretary's pool, you know. And if he doesn't get the cushion, he isn't high enough, the light is wrong on him then, so he has to sit on a phone booth some night when he's giving us the world news. I happened to be at CBS one night when Walter Cronkite's his earphone went bad. And you know, he's got that little button in his ear that when he says things, it looks like he's somehow directly connected to God. His button went out one night right in the middle of an Alpo commercial. And somehow, nothing is, you know, don't think that anything works right. You know, everybody talks about the Egyptians and how fantastic they built the pyramids. Everything is geometrically correct. But what you don't know about is the 17 pyramids that they botched, that they, you know, completely blew. And after 44 years of all the slaves, you know, climbing up the side of the pyramids with the blocks, it was crooked. And so they just took it down. They weren't going to, and we don't hear about the fumbles in history. You only hear about the successes. You know, wouldn't it be great to have a panel show of all the guys that tried to run for president? And, you know, just all these great non-winners sitting around. Of course, there's plenty of non-winners in our society these days. And if you count yourself among them, friends, you know that there's a game now that is being sold for kids, you know. Yeah, in fact, I was listening to a radio commercial the other day, and the guy was advertising discount games. I don't know what a discount game is, but I guess some games come already discounted from the manufacturer. It's like a friend of mine had a terrible experience. He wrote a novel, took him 2.5 years to write it. And they told him that the pub date, this was 2 years ago, the pub date was going to be January 19th. He was all excited, see. You know, he's waiting for the announcement to come in the Times where it says, published today. You know, that kind of thing. You see that. And he's walking down the street, and it's January 5th. And just right after New Year's, he figures, well, the world is going to be great this year. I'm starting out the new year with a novel being published. And, you know, it's going to be one song. How many of you have that illusion that after the first year, it's going to be a clean slate? George, one of the great human myths. Nevertheless, has it ever been a clean slate? But nevertheless, he was walking along 42nd Street. Now, I'm just saying this for the benefit of those of you who may be suddenly afflicted with a case of totally unwarranted optimism. This happens to people at times. You get seized by a paroxysm of elation when you're sitting at the chalk and you got a chocolate brownie, you know, and all of a sudden the world looks fantastic. You say, I've got the world by the... Well, you know. And 5 minutes later, you discover the truth, that the world has got you by the you know. But nevertheless, my friend... Now, wait a minute. You want to hear the story? My friend is walking along January 5th. Now, his book is coming out the 19th. You got it? And he's a guy that just can't stay out of bookstores. You know, one of those types. He walks in and out of bookstores all day long. And he drifted into a remainder bookstore on 42nd Street. And he was shocked. There was a whole big pile of his novel at 19 cents a copy. It hadn't even been published yet. Already on the remainder list. I mean, you know, that's like Al, please, would you give me just a wee bit of this, because I want to show you something about blasted dreams. Bring it on. It's time that we took note of the passing season. It's time that we took note that once again trauma time is on its way. You're listening to one of my favorite pieces of personal trivia. I doubt whether there are more than 7 people in the entire New York area who have a copy of this unfortunate LP. I don't keep this LP because I'm a freak on Christmas music. I keep this because I'm a disaster fan. You are listening to a recording made by the New York Jets the year they won the Super Bowl. Believe it or not, they were led by Joe Namath, who was singing contra bass on this recording. Verlin Biggs was in there singing alto. Don Maynard was on the drums. That was back in the days when it was fun to live in New York, and everything was a winner. Everything you touched. The Mets, the Knicks, the Rangers, everything won. Now the Rangers are playing down there with the Little League. And it looks like the Knicks may even be waved out of the league. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could just buy the Golden State Warriors and put them in the garden and let them play for us a while? And why can't New York, with all of its facilities, if we can spend $74 million on a new stadium, why can't we just buy the Baltimore Orioles? I mean, on photo, just put them up there in the Bronx. Yeah. Oh. I'm not kidding. If you think I'm kidding, take a look at the label there. See, when I'm not jesting here. Just take a look at the label. It is the New York Jets singing Jingle Bells. And not only that, on the other side, I have a fantastic recording of... I get it up there for it. This is even sadder. Any cut. They're all the same. They're all Christmas. So they're all the same. Any cut. That's all right, Al. And it's all PD, so you can just play any one of them. Now you're listening to the New York Giants of that period. Just bring it on anytime you get it cued. Let it go. Like all New York things, it's badly cued. There it comes. The heck is that? You would get the only cut that is totally unintelligible.
Ladies and gentlemen, the New York Giants wish you a happy holiday.
Poor Giants. Oh, my God, what's that? That's when Fran Tarkenton was throwing them for the Giants. That's when they had a football team, you know? Now they've just got a concept. Yeah, that's... come on, bring it up. Come on. If you listen carefully, you can hear Tucker Fredrickson in there singing tenor. That's when they used to sit out there and holler, "Goodbye, Allie. Goodbye." Do you remember Allie Sherman? "Goodbye, Allie." And strangely enough, that was the year that they won 9 and lost 3. The best year they've had in 42 years. When they fired a coach. This is the Giants. Oh, they're singing with a spring in their step. All right, hold it there, hold it there, hold it there. Now listen, I'm going to tell you some truth tonight. This is WOR New York. Speaking of blasted hopes and dreams, I'll tell you, I'm going to tell you a story. I have never told on the air because it's so embarrassing. And it relates to Christmas. you know, there's some things that in your own life, I know that there's just everybody is in the same boat. There are some things that happen to you in the course of your existence that are so painfully embarrassing that you don't even tell yourself about them, much less anybody. You just wipe it out, you know? Just wipe it out. Right? Just wipe it out. Wipe it out. Oh, yeah, terrible. Just wait. I'll tell you one of them. Just to give you an idea, I remember one time when I was a college sophomore. And you know that I had this date with this girl. And we spent about 3 hours together. You know, I took her to this fancy restaurant. I was going to, you know, spend everything I'd saved the whole semester on her. And halfway through the dinner, after about 3 hours of chit-chat and idle talk, and warm conversation, and I meeting eye over the candle and all that stuff, I suddenly discovered she thought I was somebody else. I thought at first when she kept calling me Sam, she was being funny. I discovered she thought she was with Sam. I don't want to hear anymore. It's commercial time. Hit the button now, please.
Christmas values are up, up, up. Christmas prices are down, down, down. That's why I'll be stopping for my Christmas shopping at Robert Hall. At Robert Hall.
With less money to Christmas shop for clothing, a lot of people are rediscovering Robert Hall. They're coming back to quality, wide selections, favorite fashions, personal service, big savings, all the things that made Robert Hall, Robert Hall. For clothing gifts to family and friends or dress up for the holidays, welcome to the store that made value a byword. To regular customers, first-timers, or the ones rediscovering, it's a pleasant surprise that even now, clothing dollars can go farther.
Shop Robert Hall.
Well, here's the Christmas pitch here. Men's shirts, knit turtlenecks, and plain flannel shirts. Hey, do turtles have necks like that anyway? Are reduced to 2 for $7 at Robert Hall. A division of United Merchants, open nightly until 9:30 p.m.
Will you join me on a one-minute trip to Paris? Close your eyes. Voila, here we are. Of course, I've not brought you all this way without purpose. I've brought you to meet Madame Rochas. Ah, lovely. Here, great fragrances are as plentiful as beautiful women. So, isn't it something special to know that Madame Rochas is one of the most popular perfumes in all of France? Its fragrance, like Paris itself, is proud and classic, yet entirely original. And there is more. Parfum de toilette, eau de cologne, and many Madame Rochas bath products. And for the men, Monsieur Rochas. Each makes a special gift for someone you feel special about. We must leave now, but remember what I told you about Madame Rochas' fragrance. Wear it always, and come back to Paris soon. Au revoir.
You're the guest at Sunday dinner with a European family. There's a chill in the air, for your host has just added another log to the fire. His flaxen-haired wife is serving you lamb, simmered in a sauce as light as anything you've ever tasted. Welcome to Italy, northern Italy, where it borders Austria, France, and Switzerland, where they drink a wine called Valpolicella, a fresh ruby red that's as different from other Italian wines as seasoned beef is from Salton Bocca. And yet as different as Valpolicella is from other Italian wines, it does share something in common with the best of them, a classic Italian name, Rufino, a name that's meant great wine since 1877. So when you're looking for a robust wine, the perfect in roast, lamb, and veal, ask for Valpolicella, Rufino Valpolicella, imported by Schefflin and Company, New York.
What's a country fresh flavor like Nuco doing in a city like New York?
Nuco's bringing country to the city. Nuco's got that country fresh taste. Nuco's bringing country to the city.
Big city now, but it wasn't always that way. I sure used to miss that back home country fresh taste of just big peas and carrots, corn and beans. Oh, my. But then Elsie Sue, she's really big critter. She put me on the Nuco margarine. It comes in both thick and soft forms, you know, and Nuco's got a real country fresh taste that makes anything you put it on taste country good. So now it's Elsie and me and Nuco margarine. We're in a big city to stay.
Yeah, that was nice. Give me a little bit to do my thing there. Hey, we have one more here, and then we'll let you rest for a bit there after the shotgun blast of the goodies. Everyone loves taking pictures around the holiday season. Why don't you visit Willoughby Peerless and get the gift of the moment? A Keystone... Hey, that's a bad phrase, a gift of the moment. A Keystone 60-second rapid-shot camera. This 750 Keystone camera uses five different types of Polaroid films and gives you black and white or color pictures within 60 seconds. Now, it used to sell for... Well, I guess it says $34.95, but you can buy it now for just $19.95. Is that $134.95 or $119.95? You better check that, boy. I want to have people going down there at Willoughby Peerless. What a price for an instant picture camera. Come and see it and shoot a Merry Christmas. Would you take a look at this, Andy, and tell me whether that says $134.95 or whether it says $34.95. That is very interesting. It says $34.95. You better be careful, buddy, because if they run down there, I'm going to hold you responsible.
I'll make up the difference.
You'll make... Be careful now. I've heard guys make statements like that before. And when they put the cuffs on them, of course, it changed the whole ballgame. Let's see. Before we go any further, one more here. Gannett, or Gannett, they prefer to pronounce it Gannett, Westchester Newspapers. Starting Wednesday, a comprehensive look at one of the world's largest corporations, IBM. In Westchester, it almost seems that around every corner stands an IBM office. This three-part series names IBM's county locations, tells what goes on at each office, when and why IBM decided to come to Westchester. All these exciting things. Oh, boy. I'll tell you. That's really exciting. So get in touch with this number. You can give them a call at 914. That's the area code. 694-1313, Gannett, Westchester Newspapers. There's always exciting stuff in there for you. If you're an IBM freak, you're going to enjoy that. You know, now that's all. I'll do one more quickie here. Olin's Rent-A-Car for Chevrolets and other fine cars, including vans. For reservations and information, call LT16161. Guy wrote me, Mr. Shepard, I timed your show the other night. You have 12 minutes in which you say something. All around. Well, it's Christmas time, buddy. That's the way it is. And it'll be a little calmer after Christmas. Very much so, I can tell you. But speaking of Christmas, I might as well tell you this story. It's an embarrassing one. I have always approached Christmas ever since this time, this moment, with a kind of nervousness that I know I shouldn't approach it with. Now, there were several things that I think caused problems for most Americans at holidays. You know that the holiday time, Christmas time, particularly this period, right here around the first of the year, as we go from one year to the next, is the highest period for mental problems. Did you know that? In fact, psychiatrists around the country, it's the only time of the year where they conduct 24-hour sessions. You know, they work in shifts. Guys sitting there talking about their mother, talking about how come their old man didn't love them, and now here it is, Christmas time, and he's got to go through all that again. And, well, you know, I've never had that kind of problem. I've had others. And I'm going to have to tell you, one of the truly most embarrassing moments of my life came as a result of Christmas time. And it's always, since that time, colored my relationship to Christmas a bit. Now, I was reminded of it just about an hour ago. I'm walking along the street on 42nd Street, and there, standing between 6th Avenue and 5th Avenue, is this Santa Claus. And he's got this bell. You've seen him? And I walked past him there was a little twinge deep down in my psyche. Now, I couldn't figure out, what the heck, why? You know, is it because, am I anti-Santa Claus? Am I pro-Santa Claus? And I hate to see Santa Claus standing out here being yelled at by cab drivers. It's neither. Actually, I had a terrible experience one time. I don't know how quite to say it. But it started in the Boy Scouts. In fact, it started and ended in the Boy Scouts. I was in Troop 41. Now, at the time that this occurred, I was a second-class scout. Now, maybe that's a symbolic title. Would you remember the ranks in scouting? What's the first one? Tenderfoot, of course. What's the second rank? Tenderfoot is like a basic rookie. And the second rank is a second-class scout. It then follows that the next rank up the ladder is a first-class scout. Correct. Now you're using your noodle. Then now they start getting tough. After the first-class scout, you become a what? A star scout. Correctement. Now, that does not refer to star in the showbiz sense. Not at all. It is a badge one receives. You are a star scout. Now, after you are a star scout, you are a light scout. Correct. And that's pretty high rank. After you are a light scout, you become, that is it. You're a 33rd degree scout. You're at the top of the heap. You are an Eagle Scout. And I never achieved that particular rank because it took unbelievable beaverism to become an Eagle Scout. You had to night and day be sitting around doing first aid at all times. You had to, you know, constantly be doing merit badge stuff. And I just didn't have that kind of a mind. I couldn't get involved in leathercraft, which is one that turned me off completely. Although I did make a Roy Acuff wallet, for those of you who are interested in handicraft. Yes, one of the big projects during my scouting career was to make a Roy Acuff wallet. Roy Acuff was a major god in the area of Indiana that I lived in. You know who Roy Acuff, he still is, you know. And my beautiful wallet consisted of a picture that I cut out of a magazine of Roy Acuff wearing his Western hat and carrying his guitar. And I inscribed on the wallet that I made a profile picture of Roy Acuff wearing his hat and carrying his guitar. And underneath it said, the great speckled bird. I entered that in a Scout Jamboree. Didn't even get honorable mention. But I still have the wallet. I ought to take that wallet sometime and whip it out and show it to the boys at Michael's Pub. You know, take my credit card out of a Roy Acuff wallet that I made myself. But nevertheless, oh yes, I also made a great neckerchief slide. And I carved this neckerchief slide, and I thought I was making a moose. And I carved this, I thought it looked like a moose, you know, when you're a kid, you work away at this thing. And I brought it in to show it to the scoutmaster. He really got bust. And he took it away and says, "You're not going to let me wear that." Apparently, it was an erotic moose. I didn't think of it that way, but these things can traumatize you. But nevertheless, Christmas time, it was about a month before Christmas, about two or three weeks, actually, before Christmas time, and we had a scout meeting, and Mr. Gordon got us all together down there in the church basement, and he said, "We have decided, we're here at Troop 41, that we're going to have a big uniform drive. And what we're going to do is we're all going to go out and we're going to raise money over Christmas time to buy uniforms for our less fortunate scout brethren who cannot afford uniforms." Well, at that point, all I owned myself was a neckerchief. And, you know, I never thought of myself as one of the less fortunate scout brethren. It's just that I kind of felt silly walking around with that funny suit on. But so I'd wear this neckerchief. It was purple and gold. But nevertheless, Mr. Gordon got us all organized. He said, "What we're going to do, we're going to have a tag day." Yes, you know, you see kids out there with a little can, tag day. You know what I mean by tag day? You don't know what a tag day is? Of course, in New York, they wouldn't know those things. A tag day is when you go out with a little can with a slot on the top, and it says on the side, "For the benefit of Troop 41, to help the lesser favored Boy Scouts to buy uniforms, tag day." And every time somebody puts a quarter in your can, they get a little tag that said, "I helped Troop 41. Okay, that's called tag day. Now, you know, up to that point, it was okay, see? But remember, it was only 2 weeks before Christmas. And so at that point, Mr. Gordon came up with this really goody. He said that we have been talking to Goldblatt's, the Goldblatt department store, and they have very, very kindly decided to contribute to our tag day. And that was the local department store, you know, like Macy's here thing. And what were they going to contribute? Well, where do you hear this, gang? They were not going to contribute money. No way. There were five patrols in our troop, Troop 41. Now, each patrol had about 10 or 15 kids, right? Right? I was in the Moose Patrol. And they were going to contribute to the entire troop, just to lend it to them for the tag day, they were going to contribute the loan of little itsy-bitsy Santa Claus costumes. So we could go out dressed as Santa Claus. Now, wait a minute. So at first it sounded great, you know? I mean, the idea of going out dressed as Santa Claus. So Mr. Gordon had us all down there in the basement. See, they hand out these boxes. They had a whole pile of boxes in the corner there. And they were Santa Clauses. He says, "Take these home now. And next Saturday at 8 o'clock, you will meet at your prescribed corner, your patrol." Each patrol was responsible for a certain area, a certain number of street corners. And he said, "You will meet your patrol leader. You will meet him at the corner that he designates at 8 a.m. Saturday. And at 6 o'clock that night, we will all meet in the church, and we will bring the cans full of money here, and then we will count it all up, and it's going to be a great tag day. So, gang, get out and fight." So I took my Santa Claus suit home, and it came in a box that said Goldblatt's on it, and it had a red coat with white cotton, you know, around the cuffs, and it had white cotton running down the front of it, and it had a big white, sort of a fluffy white cotton collar on it, and it had a big stocking cap, you know, a red stocking cap with a big white rim around it, and it had a big puffball on the top, white, and the best thing of all, it had a plastic red nose that hooked over your ears like eyeglasses. It had a nose, and it had little eyeglasses, little Santa Claus eyeglasses. You've seen those little eyeglasses that hang way down on Santa Claus's nose. A white beard and a white mustache, and all of it went over your ears like that. Fantastic. I remember going into the John, see, all by myself. My kid brother was not yet home from whatever he was doing with peanut butter. And I went into John. I put on my fantastic, my plastic nose. I looked in the mirror. There I was. Wow. You know, you'd be amazed. Even when you're only, I was about 13 at the time. Even when you're 13, when you put on a plastic nose and a fake white beard, and you have Santa Claus glasses hanging down at the bottom of your plastic red nose, it does somewhat change your appearance. It gives you a whole different image. Well, I could hardly wait for Saturday. See, I put my coat on. It was really great. And it came with a pad, believe it or not. For his, you know, Santa Claus has a big, fat stomach, see? And so what they had was like a pillow that went around your waist with a strap in the back and a strap on your chest. That is a great big thing, see? So then you put the coat over it, and you were a first-class Santa Claus. They had these patent leather boots. They were kind of like actually oil cloth. They were really cheesy. They were black oil cloth boots that came up. And you went out, you know, you were real Santa Claus. And in each one, there was a picture of Santa Claus and how you should wear your costume and how Kris Kringle really talks. So on the Saturday in question, I put on my Santa Claus suit. And that was the first time. My mother, of course, was a little bit much wiser. You know, you learn years later that your parents did know something. She said, I don't know whether you're really going to like going out. I said, oh, this is wonderful. You know, and my kid brother was under the kitchen table looking at me, and all of a sudden this 13-year-old Santa Claus emerges. And have you ever worn a Santa Claus suit, any of you out there? You have? Strange feeling. It really is. For those of you who have never actually worn a Santa Claus suit in combat, you really don't know. There's no way to explain to you what a strange feeling it is. Now, in combat, I mean, that means being Santa. You're actually being Santa Claus. So my old man says, all right, I'll take you down to the quarters. See, this is about 2 or 3 miles away from where I lived as a kid, so I couldn't duck out. He says, all right, I'll take you down there where you're going to meet. And we're going to meet on Kennedy Avenue. See, so we drove down. And I'm sitting next to the old man in the Oldsmobile. And there I'm a little tiny Santa Claus, and I'm looking out. And the people are looking in from the other car. See, they see this little Santa Claus in there with... I remember, at first, it was kind of great, see? So we met at the corner of Arizona and Kennedy, and there was my entire troop, or rather my entire patrol, the entire Moose Patrol, about 12 kids, all standing around. The patrol leader, who was Jack Martin, who was 7'9" already at the age of 13, and made a very imposing Santa Claus. And he's got all his other Santa Clauses all around him, you know, Stanley Roper and the whole crowd. So I get out of the car, and you couldn't tell one from the other. They all look exactly alike. When you put a plastic nose and a 13-year-old kid with a white fake mustache and white beard and a red suit on, he is indistinguishable from all the others. But so here was a whole bunch of us, and people were stopping and looking. And there was a whole crowd of little miniature Santa Clauses all standing around out there. And Jack Martin is telling each of us where we were to go, see. He says, and now you know, he says, hey, Shepard. And his mustache jiggles up and down. I says, yes. Because he's a big guy. He's a patrol leader. He says, all right. He says, you get down. I want you to go down. He says, I want you to go down to the corner of Summer Street, now 165th. Terrible, fantastic disaster. 165th and Summer Street had three pool rooms, one on each corner. And the fourth corner had a Standard Oil station. So I said, okay. So I go trucking on down the road in my Santa Claus suit. And all along, people are saying things like, Merry Christmas, you know what I mean? It's Santa Claus, hi. And I'm saying, ho, Santa Claus, ho, ho, ho. Well, I finally get down to my street corner, and I'm standing on the corner about the first 5 minutes. I got a bell. Each one of us, incidentally, got a bell, you know, the kind like they have in the Salvation Army. I start ringing the bell and holding the can out, see? Well, the first 5 minutes, a lady comes along, and she's got a little kid with her. And at that point, the little kid takes one look at me and says, Santa! And at that point, mother tries to drag this kid along. You see, she obviously knew this. I was not the official Santa. Well, the kid didn't know the difference. And the kid says, I want to talk to Santa! Hey, hey! And the mother says, come on, let's go. And finally, the kid is raising such hell that I says, ho, 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 hello, little boy! And at that point, the kid starts raising Cain, and the mother brings him over. And she gives me a real mean look. And she says, hello, Santa. She says, Santa, this is Clifford. And I said, hello, Clipper. Ho, ho, ho. And I hold the can out, see. He was not used to Santa Claus putting the arm on him. Santa Claus is a guy you ask for things. You don't give him things, see. So I put the can out there, and she says, oh, how terrible. And she takes the kid, and down the street they go. Yeah, and at that point, I began to feel really rotten. You know, I'm out there with this can. Have you ever really begged on the street, buddy? It really starts to get to your head. Well, about 10 minutes after I began my career as a street corner bell ringing, arm putting on, begging Santa Claus, who comes down the street with his buddy but Scott Farkas? Well, now, Scott Farkas, under the best of conditions, was not somebody that I chose to meet at any point. He had yellow eyes, for starter. Scott Farkas's hair grew all the way down, almost to the tip of his nose. He had a crew haircut that made him look a little bit like a cantaloupe wearing a hairbrush. And there I am standing there with my bell. See, I'm ringing the bell. And I kind of like ringing the bell. I'm ringing the bell. I got about a total of maybe 75 cents in my can. And I've sold about maybe 5 or 6 different tags. When along comes Scott Farkas, I could see him coming down the street. And there was a look on his face as if, well, have you ever seen the movie Jaws? Well, you know the look on the shark's face when he decided that he was really going to go all the way? Well, Scott Farkas had the look on the face. Scott Farkas was truly a legendary bully. If those of you who are confused, it's not Scott Farkas, it is Scut. S-C-U-T. Like Scut. Scut. Farkas's yellow eyes, I could see him for a half a block away, and he starts picking up speed. About 100 yards away, he hollers, hey, Shepard! Santa Claus, huh? Hello, Sandy! Hey, Sandy, should I tell you what I want for Christmas, Sandy? Well, I could see that it was going to be nothing but real serious trouble. And about 25 yards away, as Farkas is gathering steam, he's with about 7 of his toadies, because he spotted a kid that he's been after for at least 6 months, and now he's got him trapped wearing a rubber nose, wearing Santa Claus mustaches and beard, wearing a pair of granny glasses. I took off. I turned right and took off down 165th Street with about 15 guys chasing Santa Claus. I went through the bottom floor of Gold Blast without touching the ground, right up the escalator with Scott Farkas and his friends after. Well, I spent the afternoon, I finally rounded into an alley and got away from him, at least partially. I spent the afternoon hiding under a front porch, dressed in a Santa Claus suit, wearing a rubber nose. And ever since that time, I've been very nervous about Santa Claus's and Christmas. Who knows? Yes, who does know? Only the cattle, of course. This is WOR New York.